happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, from Yale University, a new study on how soy is linked to fewer fractures in younger breast cancer survivors who generally are demineralized, mainly because of the radiation chemotherapy. That's good news. We have a lot more on health and healing. Also today, we'll be doing an in-depth original investigative report on Merck's race to become, well, the new Monsanto. Richard Gale, myself, have worked on this for some time. We are now seeing a pushback, not just with vaccines that Merck makes most of them, but also on all the drugs that end up hurting people and frequently killing people, and how nobody ever goes to jail, no reputation's ever besmirched. They don't even have to plead guilty to criminal acts. They can simply have no plea at all. They just pay a fine. And therefore, they keep going forward. An in-depth discussion on that, time permitting. After that, I'll be taking some of the calls from people in the audience. A new paper published in the JNCI Cancer Spectrum, that's from Oxford University, is the first study to find that diets high in soy foods are associated with a decreased risk of osteoporotic bone fractures in premenopausal breast cancer survivors. There are a lot of those women in the United States, by the way. As breast cancer is the second most common cancer among women in the United States, with 1 in 8 women diagnosed with it during their lifetime. And many treatments for breast cancer can cause premature menopause and decreased bone mineral density. This leads to a higher incidence of osteoporosis-related fractures among survivors compared to healthy women in the same age group. So I would suggest having some form of tempeh or tofu on a regular basis in the diet. From the University of Belgrade, which is in Serbia, fish oil helps protect your brains, especially if you're pre-symptomatic Alzheimer's, in this laboratory study, and this was published in PLOS One. What it means is simply, we have what are called neurites. They're the axons and dendrites that protrude from and connect cells known as neurons. Those are your brain cells. Just to visualize a telephone pole, and in between the two telephone poles, you have a wire. The wire carries your message. When we drink, when we eat a poor diet, when we're under stress, we snap these dendrites. Now, historically, we were told nothing can change that. That's not true. In fact, alpha-lipoic acid and phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, a lot of nutrients can rebuild those dendrites and also re-energize the mitochondria and the neurons themselves. Now, this is particularly true when you see someone who's beginning to lose their memory and going into Alzheimer's, which is a form of dementia. So get your fish oil. I'm suggesting if you are of an age where you're likely to end up having dementia, you don't want that amyloid beta protein, you don't want your neurons cell loss, and that's what's going to happen with Alzheimer's, then by all means, take your fish oil. Also from Johannes Gutenberg University, which is in Germany, researchers determine how food nanoparticles affect your gut microbiome. I mentioned this last week, how your gut microbiome within the intestines plays a significant role in determining the risk level of many diseases. A German study reported that tiny particles of food could bind themselves to the intestinal microbes, thereby altering the normal life cycle of the bacteria as well as their interactions with the human host. So, don't have anything with these nanoparticles. Look at the labels and stay away from them. All right? You don't want that. You want good, healthy, normal bacteria in your biome. And by the way, your biome is made up of colonies of microorganisms inside the human body. Now, it includes the microbes in the gut, the mouth, the nasal cavity, the skin, and other parts of the body. And the composition and diversity of this natural microbiome responds strongly to nutrition in the form of quality foods, especially probiotics like sauerkraut, or even, for that matter, dairy and non-dairy yogurts. They don't have a lot of microbiomes producing bacteria in those, but you could just take your pill, maybe 5 to 10 billion, that would be good. Also, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, promotes learning and memory performance concomitantly with neural stem progenitor cell proliferation and neurogenesis. This is from Tabriz University in Iran. So according to this new report, the decline in neurogenesis is a very critical problem in Alzheimer's disease. Different biological activities have been found that end up causing this, and then some that will help prevent this, and quercetin's one that will prevent it. So if you want to keep your brain healthier longer, if you want better memory, cognition, I'm going to suggest 2 to 3,000 milligrams a day of quercetin spread throughout the day. I think it'll make a big difference. Also, from the University of Vermont, exercise is the new prescription for psychiatric patients. When it comes to inpatient treatment of a range of mental health and mood disorders, from anxiety to depression, to schizophrenia to suicidality, and acute psychotic episodes, a new study advocates for exercise rather than psychotropic medication as the primary prescription and method of intervention. The findings from the study reveal that physical exercise is so effective at alleviating patient symptoms that it could reduce patients' time admitted to acute facilities and reliance on psychotropic medications. It was about 6 years ago now that I did a study, a clinical study, 500 individuals. We met each week for 3 months. And to get in, you had to be diagnosed with clinical depression or anxiety disorder. Most of the people were on meds. The very first thing we did was change the diet to a healthy plant-based diet, and then got them exercising, because I know what happens when you exercise, how many of the endorphins you're releasing, the feel-good hormone. And so I suggested to people they exercise in the morning for a half hour and in the early evening for a half hour. That way you've got about 12 hours of the feel-good hormones cascading through your body, and that allows you to feel better. So anyone that you know who's suffering from depression, get them to exercise. This is published in Global Advances in Health and Medicine Journal. Also from the National Research Institute of Ayurvedic Drug Development in India, there's a new discovery of a plant that's used in Ayurvedic medicine, but it can treat symptoms of chronic fatigue syndrome, and that's a big deal. A person with chronic fatigue syndrome experiences extreme tiredness that can't be explained by any underlying medical condition. And the consistent fatigue can't be relieved by rest and is severe enough to disrupt their daily activities. So for chronic fatigue syndrome to be diagnosed, the unrelenting fatigue must last at least 6 months. Well, this complex chronic illness affects about 1 million Americans, and chronic fatigue syndrome is most commonly seen among people in their 40s and 50s. Women are also 400% more likely to be diagnosed with chronic fatigue as men. Now, currently, there is no orthodox treatment that specifically targets chronic fatigue syndrome, only its symptoms. So Then someone came up with, what about this article in the Journal of Ayurvedic and Integrative Medicine? They have a therapeutic species of orchids. Yeah, let me give you the spelling of it. S-W-A-R-N-A, Swarna, Jibanti, J-I-B-A-N-T-I. Is an orchid used in Ayurvedic medicine to promote longevity. So they find that it really makes a difference, along with Panax ginseng for chronic fatigue syndrome. So I always want to share something that is grounded in good science and clinical experience. Also, a considerable percentage of deaths in HIV patients are due to cryptococcal infections. This is from Barcelona Institute for Global Health. And the cryptococcal meningitis causes about 1 in 10 HIV-related deaths, according to the study. Now, what is it? Cryptococcus is an opportunistic fungus that is found in environmental samples but can cause fatal disease, especially in immune-suppressed individuals. In fact, cryptococcal meningitis represents the second most common cause of AIDS-related mortality after tuberculosis. And so one of the things that can help this, by the way, is ozone, intravenous ozone. It has the ability to knock this out. There are natural therapies that can help. From Georgia Institute of Global Health, high blood pressure is linked with vascular dementia. What do I mean? I mean that high blood pressure could significantly raise the risk of developing the second most common form of dementia, according to the Institute for Good Global Health. They looked at 4 million people who were analyzed, with researchers finding heightened blood pressure associated with a 62% higher risk of vascular dementia, especially in those 30 to 50 years of age. And vascular dementia rates are increasing all over the world and will pose a significant economic and social burden in both developed and developing countries. So these results are particularly important. So what do you do about it? First, go on a lower salt diet. A lower salt diet is important. We're just consuming way too much sodium in the American diet, upwards of 6,000-7,000 milligrams. You don't need that much sodium. And also, have de-stressing techniques, because that can cause your blood pressure to go up as well. So if you have de-stressing techniques, journal writing, walking, being around nature, meditation, yoga, you can lower your blood pressure, because we know that when you have high blood pressure, you're going to have problems by damaging and narrowing the blood vessels in the brain. And over time, this raises the risk of a blood vessel becoming blocked or bursting. And this is known as a risk factor for stroke and cardiovascular disease. So no need for that. Also, from the University of Malaya in Malaysia, caraway extract shows slimming potential for women. An aqueous extract of caraway seeds can suppress appetite and help slim waistlines and thighs in physically active women. This was published in Phytotherapy Research. That's simple, that's easy, and that's not difficult to do. And all finally, from the University of Colorado, why lack of sleep is bad for your heart. The study finds that short sleepers have lower levels of a gene-regulating microRNA. Now, we know in recent years that numerous studies have shown that people who don't get enough sleep are at a greater risk of stroke and heart attack. And this new study, published in the Journal of Experimental Physiology, explains why. It found that people who sleep fewer than 7 hours per night have lower blood levels of three physiological regulators, or microRNAs, which influence gene expression and play a key role in maintaining vascular health. So don't eat before going to bed. Don't drink before going to bed, about 3 hours. Turn off all lights. Unplug your computer and your television, because even though it's turned off, until it's unplugged, it's still throwing out electromagnetic pulses and frequencies that can disrupt our circadian rhythms and the pineal gland. And then make sure your room is dark. Those are just some of the latest things that you should do. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. This evening at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, James North is the editor-at-large of the Mondo Wise. That's an independent news site informing people about developments in Israel and Palestine. Very, very insightful person. And so we're going to have him on, and Allison Weir. She's a journalist, civil rights and peace activist, and president of the Council for National Interests. So we're going to have those two on talking about what's going on in the Palestinian and the Israeli conflict that is not allowing anything to go forward in any meaningful way. So that's tonight at 7 o'clock. But right now, I'm going to share an article. It's been fully referenced. It's about Merck's race to become the new Monsanto. At one time, Monsanto was frequently named as the, quote, most hated U.S. firm. Even USA Today was obliged to list it among the, quote, 20 most hated companies, alongside Facebook, Fox Entertainment, Cigna, Wells Fargo, and the Trump Organization. In 2011, Monsanto earned its highest award as the world's worst company in an international poll. A Nielsen poll ranked it third that same year. Throughout its sordid history of corruption, flawed science, concealing unfavorable research data, ghostwriting, faux professional journals as a ruse to promote its products, and covert public relations strategies, Monsanto had been a health risk for millions of people around the world. Before its first genetically modified recombinant bovine growth hormone for dairy products and GMO crop seeds, the company brought us the toxic DDT, PCBs, Asian orange, and the neurotoxic artificial sweetener aspartame, and its very serious health adverse effects from copper 7 interuterine contraceptive device. Perhaps no other corporation has been more deserving to stir up such public anger that would mobilize over 2 million protesters to join anti-Monsanto rallies in over 50 countries on a single day. Now we believe we may have found another company that may challenge Monsanto for its history and culture of malfeasance and scientific denialism, oh, and greed as well. Competition for the most hated distinction is fierce. There are many deserving multinational corporations to loathe and scorn. Exxon, British Petroleum, for their utter disregard of the environment. Goldman Sachs and Bank of America. Amazon, Google, Uber, Walmart, and of course Facebook. The entire private military-industrial complex. However, Monsanto built its contemptible reputation on a culture of greed and deception that has put humanity's health at serious risk. Numerous people have been injured or died from its products. Therefore, the criteria for our search is measured by the amount of harm inflicted upon the public for the sole purpose of generating profits to create executive millionaires and to please shareholders. If our federal health agencies were publicly traded as companies, it might surely be in the running for a top position. The FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the National Cancer Institute. Iatrogenic medicine or medical error is now considered officially the third leading cause of death in the United States. Our research shows it's number one, but let's even go with their figures. Their figures say it's number three after cardiovascular disease and cancer. The majority of these deaths are caused by FDA-approved drugs, adverse effects, and from patients taking multiple medications without any clinical research or flawed clinical research to determine the safety of their synergistic effects. Our health agency's oversight and monitoring of drugs on the market is dismal, and it often takes years for the agencies to act after the first signs of red flashings and sirens. Aside from the U.S. government, which private corporations have done a great deal of harm. Remember, the government has killed a lot of people. Think of Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan. Think of all the different places we've intervened. So they would have to be number one. But right behind them, when you go past Syria and these other places, the answer is evident. Merck. Therefore, we are casting our vote for this pharmaceutical giant to replace Monsanto as worthy of international repudiation. One of the worst corporate deals the U.S. government may have ever made in modern history was to acquire the American subsidiary of the German pharmaceutical firm Merck and Company during the First World War. Later, in 1953, Merck acquired a competitive drug maker, Sharp & Dohme, thereby establishing itself as America's largest drug developer and manufacturer. However, since then, this corporate octopus has ensnarled 13 other drug firms, including Schering Plough, which it acquired for $41 billion. The two pharmaceutical giants have earned $47 billion in combined sales at the time the merger was finalized in 2009. Merck started its life in the 1970s, the current incarnation of it. In 1975, it was busted by the Securities and Exchange Commission for illegal payments to foreign government officials from, quote, approximately 36 nations, end quote. The scam was orchestrated through personal bank accounts with the sole purpose of advancing drug sales and approvals through foreign nations' regulatory medical agencies. One of the largest frauds in modern medical history was Merck's anti-inflammatory drug Vioxx, V-I-O-X-X, which later resulted in fines above $4.8 billion. That seems like a lot. It isn't, because they made over $18 billion. So let's see, you make $18 billion and you give back $4.8 billion. You still come out a winner. Nobody was charged. The company wasn't fined. Nothing was mandatory. But 60,000 deaths occurred from a sudden heart attack and over 120,000 serious medical injuries. At its height, Vioxx earned over $2 billion in revenues annually, and it's estimated that 25 million patients were prescribed the medication. The securities class action suit against the company alone reached $1 billion, placing it in the top 15 securities lawsuits in U.S. corporate history. The centerpiece of the crime was Merck's intentional withholding scientific data about Vioxx's adverse cardiovascular effects. Years after the settlement, Ron Unz, that's U-N-Z, the publisher of the American Conservative, undertook his own investigation to validate Vioxx's death toll. Analyzing the drug's adverse effects over a longer period of time, he estimated that Merck may have been responsible for nearly 500,000 premature deaths in elderly patients, the drug's primarily target group. That is roughly the same number of total civilian military and terrorist deaths from the U.S. military escapades in Afghanistan and Pakistan combined. But that, it doesn't end there. Merck settled 47,000 pending lawsuits for personal injuries and 265 class action cases, and that was a small pittance for the harm that Vioxx left in its wake. Merck executives were never properly punished for willingly concealing the drug's dangers in order to assure FDA approval. In Australia, Merck's efforts to increase Vioxx's profits employed other forms of corruption. The Australian government launched a class action suit against the drug maker on charges that Merck schemed a fake scientific paper that was ghostwritten for a medical journal in order to put Vioxx into a positive light. Testimonies during the trial stated data was completely based upon, quote, wishful thinking. Merck also founded the peer-reviewed journal Australian Journal of Bone and Joint Medicine. The journal was nothing but a fraud. It was not properly peer-reviewed, and its primary purpose was to promote Vioxx on the Australian continent. Moreover, the class action lawsuit contained Merck's emails assessed by Australian officials. The company's internal communications ordered select employees to draft up a hit list of physicians who were critical of Vioxx. According to the document, these physicians were targeted to be, quote, neutralized, end quote, or discredited, end quote. Some, including Dr. James Fries at Stanford University Medical School, were clinical investigators who happened to speak out about the drug shortcomings. One email said, quote, "We may need to seek them out and destroy them where they live," end quote. Now think about that for a moment. Think about Robert F. Kennedy. There's only a couple radio programs in America that he's ever invited onto, mine and over on Fox, Tucker Carlson, but no one else over there. Why? Has he made inaccurate statements? Does he have false science? No. When you go after any of the major corporations, they put together hit lists. I'm not suggesting killing someone. I'm suggesting it's easier. You can discredit them. Wikipedia is probably the most famous place to, quote, freeze a bad biography, a fraudulent biography, a completely disingenuously wrong biography, and you can never change it. If you doubt me, why don't you ask Rupert Sheldrake, Cheryl Atkinson, ask Deepak Chopra, Abby Martin, ask any of the hundreds of people who can't make any changes. But every time someone Googles something, you're there and you're never there in a good light and you can't change it. So, here is Merck deciding that any scientist, physician, journalist who says anything wrong about their products is to be targeted. Similarly, Monsanto also earned a reputation for targeting its critics for harassment. This month, Bayer released a public apology for the discovery of a Monsanto hit list of 200 French journalists and politicians who oppose glyphosate and its GMO crops. It has acted similarly in other countries, including the United States, according to veteran journalist Kerry Gillum. The list originated from the multinational public relations firm Fleischmann Hillard. Merck had also employed Fleischmann Hillard, as well as Monsanto's other notorious PR firm, Ketchum. One of Merck's executive directors, Ian McDonald, earlier served as a vice president for Fleischmann. The PR firm's senior advisor on healthcare, Dr. Lucas Pfizer, was on Merck's company for 25 years in its government affairs unit. Merck's revolving door is not limited to our federal health agencies, but also fully infiltrates some of the world's most shadowy PR firms with a mission to clean up the public image of excessive elites and their corporations. The good news from the Vioxx debacle was that Merck's stock cratered 27%. Likewise, with lawsuits against Monsanto mounting in Bayer's legal department, the stock is nosediving. The latest of the three court decisions awarding a couple $2 billion for each having contracted non-Hodgkin lymphoma after years of being exposed to Roundup, which they were led to believe was completely safe. It is now estimated there will be a minimum of 11,000 lawsuits against Bayer Monsanto. With the future of Roundup now in question, the entire portfolio of Roundup-ready genetically modified seeds is in jeopardy. But Merck's efforts to conceal the dangers of its products and falsify data about its drugs' efficacy and safety and exaggerate its medical claims go back 60 years. In the 1960s, the Food and Drug Administration discovered that the drug maker's arthritis medication, Indocin, had not been properly tested for efficacy and its adverse effects were being completely ignored. In the 1970s, Merck's drug DES-diethylstilbestrol, prescribed for the prevention of miscarriages, caused a flurry of vaginal cancer cases and other gynecological disorders. Merck had all along known that DES was carcinogenic based upon its own animal clinical trials. In 2007, its cholesterol drug Zytia was shown to increase liver disease. Again, Merck had known about Zytia's liver risk without sharing that with the world's community. And that was actually withheld during the clinical trials, but we weren't informed. It would also appear that Merck has managed to hijack courts as well. This includes an early 2019 ruling by Trump's corporate-friendly U.S. Supreme Court to side with the drug maker and quash hundreds of lawsuits for failing to issue warnings that its osteoporosis drug, Fosamax, may contribute to debilitating bone breaks. Monsanto accomplished the same. The Supreme Court sided with the agri-giant to deal a blow against organic farmers who were suing Monsanto for contaminating their fields with genetically modified seeds. Recently, a federal court in California found that Merck committed perjury for lying in a patent infringement case against Gilead Sciences over the latter's blockbuster hepatitis C drug, Sovaldi. The judge ruled that Merck carried out, quote, a systematic and outrageous deception in conjunction with unethical business practices and litigation misconduct, end quote. Turned out that Merck's patient claims were a complete sham and orchestrated by its legal division. Merck not only makes dangerous medications, but it has also found itself in the courtroom on many other occasions for price fixing, routinely defrauding and overbilling states, Medicare and Medicaid programs, and violating the anti-kickback statute. In 2006, the IRS went after Merck for owing almost $2 billion in back taxes. According to the Wall Street Journal, Merck partnered with a British bank to create an offshore subsidiary in tax-friendly Bermuda to divert taxable revenue on its best-selling cholesterol drug, Zocor, and Mevacor through the patent scheme. The company ran the operation for 10 years before the FDA uncovered the racket. Merck is America's leading vaccine manufacturer. Currently, it markets vaccines for hemophilus B, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, individually and in combination, human papillomavirus, which is Gardasil, measles, mumps, and rubella, the MMR, pneumococcal, rotavirus, varicella, which is chickenpox, and zoster virus for shingles. In 2010, Merck obtained exclusive rights to Mass Biologics vaccine portfolio. The consequence is that Merck's adult vaccine portfolio includes 9 of the 10 vaccines on the CDC's adult immunization schedule. The company now holds almost a full monopoly on the government's vaccine schedule, just as Monsanto had for the most profitable genetically modified crops. On its website, the FDA assures the public that, quote, vaccines, as with all products regulated by the FDA, undergo a rigorous review of laboratory and clinical data to ensure the safety, efficacy, and purity and potency of products, end quote. However, except for Gardasil, not a single one of Merck's vaccines has been tested in a scientifically viable double-blind placebo-controlled trial. In each case, the placebo in the control group was not inert, such as the use of plain saline. That would be inert. Rather, Merck only tested the vaccine with a viral or bacterial component against a faux placebo containing the same ingredients, including aluminum, but minus the biological factors. Known as a carrier solution, the standard scientific protocols does not designate it has a proper placebo for measuring the efficacy and disease risks of a drug. And in the case of Gardasil, the trial was nothing less than a statistical trickery to mask Gardasil's adverse effects. Therefore, the FDA's claim is patently false. None of Merck's vaccines have ever undergone a rigorous review prior to regulatory approval. Just as Monsanto was enabled by President Clinton and every succeeding president to capture the Department of Agriculture and the FDA as a means to expand its global hegemony on seeds, genetically modified crops, herbicides, and pesticides, Merck has had its official representatives, including the scientists shilling for Big Pharma, on FDA and CDC advisory boards to do its financial bidding in the federal health agencies for decades. For this reason, the United States national vaccine policies are thoroughly influenced and negotiated to conform to private pharmaceutical interest. In the case of the CDC, the agency holds 20 vaccine patents that are licensed to the vaccine makers for substantial royalties. The incentive is profit and nothing but. not the well-being of our average Americans. In fact, the situation is far worse. In 2007, the Food and Drug Administration Science Board issued a report entitled FDA Science and Mission at Risk. The federal agency fully acknowledges, quote, its inability to keep up with scientific advances means that Americans' lives are at risk. The Food and Drug Administration's evaluation methods have remained largely unchanged over the last 50 years. The world looks to the FDA as a leader. Today, not only can the agency not lead, it is utterly corrupt. It cannot even keep up with the advances of science. End quote. In other words, our federal healthcare system has been so incompetent that it has had to resort to placing its trust in the private drug complex. Merck has taken full advantage of both the FDA's and CDC's negligence and shortcomings. Today, Merck and the other largest American drug makers, such as Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Amgen, and Bristol-Myers, are the de facto regulators of drug efficacy and safety, and the health of every American is trapped in an ineffectual healthcare system that continues to erode. Today, we are witnessing an epidemic of neurological disorders in children. Many of these conditions fall under the umbrella of what was originally known as autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. At current rates, the CDC estimates that 1 in 59 children are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. 50 years ago, it was 3 in 10,000. So just stop there for a moment. Let's just use some common sense. You don't have to be a PhD in biochemistry to understand this. 50 years ago, before these vaccines, it was such a rarity if someone developed autism spectrum disorder that it made news. Today, we're getting to where we're going to have, according to one MIT scientist that I filmed, she said that within the next 5 years, we'll probably have one in every three young boys diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And yet the entirety of the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, NBC, all the major newspapers have aligned themselves perfectly with Big Pharma's dictates. Now, if Richard Gale and I have published over 70 articles in the last 12 months, I don't know of any other journalists in the world that have published 70 articles. I mean major articles. Go up and look at them. Couldn't the New York Times, with all of its resources, with all of its highly skilled journalists, find the truth also? You would think. But instead, they condemn the, quote, anti-vaxxers. Just the term anti-vax is used to moniker people as if somehow you're against science, when the reality is just the opposite, just the opposite. When 7 million parents of vaccine-damaged children who trusted, who believed, and who allowed their children to be sacrificed on that altar of orthodoxy, when they end up with the damage, that's when they do their homework. It should be before, but they're doing it afterwards. We are a very compliant society. And as a result, these people now have no advocates in the government, none. In fact, if you doubt me, we have a Representative Posey from Florida. He actually has, I believe it was 75,000 to 100,000 documents from Dr. William Thompson showing how corrupt the CDC is and how the MMR vaccine created over 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American boys 36 months and younger. Think of that for a moment. Now, shouldn't that cause every African-American parent to say, hold on a second, you're saying 324% increase? That's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. However, the media will not believe the parents. The Me Too movement says, well, you know, believe her. Excuse me. But don't believe a vaccine parent, one who suffered from damage. Don't believe her, but believe anyone else. What has happened to us when it comes to looking for the truth? Are we even capable of it? Are we capable of seeing how biased our media is, how biased science is, how biased federal regulatory agencies are, how biased our legislators are, utterly corrupt in California? So that's what we're dealing with today. In his recent historical detective book, The Autism Vaccine, The Story of Modern Medicine's Greatest Tragedy, science author Forrest Marready traces the origins of the emergency of a new childhood psychological condition in the mid-1930s that would eventually be termed autism. In the late 19th and 20th centuries, diphtheria was a horrible, life-threatening infection, taking the lives of thousands of children across Europe and the United States. In 1921 alone, diphtheria killed over 15,000 individuals. The first diphtheria vaccine mimicked Jenner smallpox inoculation, but it was completely ineffective. Happenstance, autistic symptoms were first identified separately on opposite sides of the Atlantic at roughly the same time. In Austria, pediatrician Dr. Hans Asperger was documenting children who displayed a new series of abnormal psychological symptoms. The children were highly intelligent, but simultaneously exhibited unusual erratic and non-social behavior. His work remained virtually untranslated and virtually unknown until 1991, when the term Asperger's was finally coined for a condition on the autism spectrum. Asperger's would later embrace eugenics and collaborate with the Nazis to euthanize disabled children at the Am Spiegelgrund Clinic. Remember, there were hundreds of thousands of people in mental institutions who were euthanized by the Germans. And I actually have some film footage that was sent to me of all the doctors in Germany, especially the psychiatrists, celebrating with champagne when the last of these patients were euthanized. Look into the background of the people that we praise a little deeper. On the other side of the Atlantic, U.S. psychiatrist Dr. Leo Kanner published his major study, Autistic Disturbances of Affective Contact. Kanner independently describes autistic characteristics similar to Asperger. The single connecting link between Asperger's and Kanner's observations, according to Marready, was that only in Austria and in the United States was aluminum salts being added to as an adjuvant to the diphtheria vaccine. In the early 1920s, the Philadelphia company Mulford Company had isolated the diphtheria toxoid upon which a new vaccine was developed. Merck later absorbed Mulford and subsequently added aluminum salts as a means to boost the toxoid's activity to trigger an immune response. This was the first use of an aluminum adjuvant that we could identify. Back in Europe, Merck's original parent company likewise added aluminum for distribution in Austria. So according to Mulready's early history of autism spectrum disorder origins, it was the addition of the highly neurotoxic aluminum adjuvant that set the stage for the autistic trend that is now epidemic. How much should Merck be held responsible for the first triggering of autism crisis? Merck and all of our federal health agencies continue to deny the serious physical and mental risks for injecting aluminum adjuvants into infants and children. However, new studies are coming forth showing that aluminum is far more toxic than previously believed. International renowned autoimmunologist Dr. Schoenfeld at Tel Aviv University identified adjuvant-induced autoimmune inflammatory syndrome that is associated with aluminum hydroxide additives used in vaccines. This autoimmune disease is now being called Schoenfeld syndrome after its discoverer. Now let's go back one moment. Do you remember I said that there was a legislator in Florida? He has tried nonstop for years to try to have a hearing where Dr. William Thompson would testify under oath about all the corruption and the falsifying of data and the covering up of bad results and throwing all the original science in black plastic garbage bags and destroying it. No one in Congress is willing to work with him of holding the vaccine makers and the CDC responsible. That's how utterly, completely corrupt our Congress is. Left or right doesn't matter. Democrat or Republican doesn't matter. It's endemic. And that's what happens. Also, I wanted to see what does the actual toxicological data show? Because you never hear any pro-vaccine advocate show you the toxicological data. If you're saying something is safe, then show me the data. We looked at thousands of studies. Every single study in the scientific literature on aluminum shows it's neurotoxic, and it is unsafe in any amount. You wouldn't know that, would you? You wouldn't know that based upon how far we've come from honest science. And then the efficacy studies are ridiculous. The only way they can prove efficacy is if you don't get the disease, 100% of the reason you didn't get it is given to the vaccine. Give you an example. Let's say you get a flu shot and you don't come down with the flu. But let's just say you moved to Florida, you're outside getting vitamin D, sunlight. Let's say you're drinking more citrus, you're exercising, you're de-stressed. You're already building up a natural anti-flu immune system. You'll be given no credit for that. That's how corrupt the science is. Although not completely innocent of internal corruption and conflicts of interest, the Cochrane Database collaboration arguably remains the most reliable resource for analysis of drugs, vaccines, and medical devices in the evidence-based medicine establishment. In its 2016 analysis of Merck's human papillomavirus vaccine, Gardasil, the investigators were so alarmed they filed a complaint against the European Medical Agency for failing to adequately assess the vaccine's neurological harms. In a similar story with Monsanto's Roundup, Gardasil may very well become the company's Achilles heel. The development, scientific rationale, fraudulent clinical trials and data reporting, and inside negotiations with federal health agencies and officials to market the vaccine to preteen and teen girls and boys is a story riddled with corruption. Today, it is Merck's third largest revenue-generating drug after its cancer drug and diabetes drug, earning $3.1 billion. I've interviewed hundreds of people whose families were destroyed because of Gardasil vaccine. No one who is pro-vaccine has interviewed any of these people. In fact, not my latest film, but the film before that, I went to Chicago, where we had assembled 400 individuals who all had been vaccine damaged, and using the DAN group, which is a principle of building up the gut microflora and helping with B12 and folic acid and other nutrients. We're getting great results. I ask us, you've made major improvements. Has anyone in the media come to do your story? Nope. No one. The MMR vaccine is fifth leading profit maker, $1.8 billion. Gardasil's success has absolutely nothing to do with the prevention of an urgent national need. Instead, it was a business strategy through Merck's influence over our nation's regulatory agencies and state politicians whose election campaigns it funds. Among all vaccination injuries recorded in the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, Gardasil leads the pack. As of this year, there are over 60,000 reports of adverse reactions of Gardasil. Of those 60,000, over 400 died, 900 were life-threatening, and 3,000 were permanent disabilities, over 6,000 led to hospitalizations, and over 15,000 led to emergency room visits for serious reactions. All told, 1 in 6 of the adverse reactions were categorized as disabled and serious. In 2018, a French oncologist, Dr. Gerald Delphine, stumbled upon a correlation between the increase of cervical cancer rates with the rising rates of Gardasil vaccination. He also compared France, which was deliberating on whether to mandate the human papillomavirus vaccine, with other countries that relied upon pap smears as a preventative measure rather than the vaccine. He observed that in all countries that prioritized pap smears, cervical cancer rates were decreasing, whereas in those countries with higher human papillomavirus vaccines and their compliance, the rates increased. In his letter to the French government in defiance of Merck's lobbying efforts, he said, quote, "The compulsory health measures should not be based on faith in vaccination or hidden conflicts of interest, but on proven facts verifiable by every citizen. However, the facts established by the official records of cancer registries show that the human papillomavirus vaccination does not protect against invasive cancer of the cervix, but seems rather to maintain its frequency at a higher level and sometimes even increases it," meaning you're going to get more cancer if you take the vaccine. So when does most cervical cancer occur? 58 years after the vaccine. 58 years. Well, how would you know that the vaccine was going to prevent anything? A lot can happen in your 58-year journey. There is no science to justify any of this. An article published in the French journal AgoraVox noted that more national health ministries are coming around to acknowledging that Gardasil is an extremely unsafe vaccine. Japan, Austria, and Denmark no longer promote it due to its frail individuals, because once they've been vaccinated, they end up with some fatal consequences. Public demonstrations against Merck's Gardasil have occurred in Japan, Colombia, and Ireland. Yet none of this seems to rise to the level of warning the public about Gardasil's risks, and they've reached the American media. Hopefully this may change. I doubt it, because I don't trust anyone in the American media. Medical researchers at the University of South Alabama recently presented their paper at the Society of Gynecological Oncology, their annual conference. There's great disparity between the human papillomavirus vaccine compliance across Alabama counties, which range anywhere from 33 to 66%. Yet the epidemiological data suggests that there is no evidence that Gardasil lowered cancer rates in the counties with higher vaccine uptake. Moreover, there is zero chance of preteens and teens getting cervical cancer. The average age for the onset of cancer is 58 years, nor has the vaccine been on the market long enough to determine whether it protects a woman when she reaches even close to that age. Its product insert for physicians states the vaccine, quote, "may not result in protection in all vaccine recipients," that it has not been demonstrated to prevent human papillomavirus-related CIN2/3, which is abnormal precancerous cervical cells, or worse in women older than 26 years of age, end quote. That's Merck's own package insert. Consequently, there's absolutely no scientific rationale for states to mandate the human papilloma vaccine for school children, let alone even vaccinating them in the first place. Moreover, the federal agencies and Merck market the vaccine under the false pretense that human papilloma virus infection is the leading cause of cervical cancer. Correctly, only a third of cervical cancers cases are caused by the virus, and in most cases, the human papilloma virus will self-correct by the body in generally about 2 years. The other day, I had Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on this program. He is currently taking steps to sue Merck over the Gardasil deception. His in-depth investigations through the Children's Health Defense Organization has uncovered evidence that you can have a lot of serious side effects, birth defects, in children conceived of human papillomavirus vaccinated moms, miscarriages, and have an increase 200-fold above normal. And girls are experiencing serious reproductive complications, including infertility, at approximately 10-fold above the normal rate. So where do we go from here? During Merck's own Gardasil clinical trials, 2.3% of girls and women between the ages of 9 and 26 develop a serious autoimmune disease and crippling neurological disorders within 7 months of vaccination. Among the 10,700 who received the actual vaccine, 2.3% had an autoimmune disorder, and the aluminum hydroxyphate of the aluminum sulfate adjuvant solution was in the ingredients. We're not going to stop companies from trying to profit off our ignorance. And how they get around it is they try to lobby through the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEX, at the state level, meeting in secret with your state representatives and get them to take their bill and make it into the legislators' laws. So they're acting as if they're doing something on the benefit of the people. They're not. I believe that everyone in this audience, since we're heard clear across America, should write every member of their state legislatures and ask, have you ever met at any time with a member of the ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council? If you have, then there should be a movement to get them thrown out of office. For firms such as Merck and Monsanto, injuries and deaths are the necessary collateral damage of getting poorly tested products on the market and as fast as possible. Therefore, we should all be placed on warning. Merck may very well mutate into the new Monsanto. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.